Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Good morning, geeks and germs, witches and warlocks, Sith and Jedi, those of us who made it to space this week, and those of us who didn't. Sorry, SpaceX. Welcome to Who Won the Week, where we're bringing you all sorts of news and interviews and conversations and thoughts. Sometimes there are just loose thoughts in there. And of course, at the end of every episode, we let you know definitively who or what or when or why or how won the week. So what are some of the things in the running this week, you ask? I'm very glad that you did ask. You're going to want to sharpen your teeth because we're going to sink our fangs into a couple of extra juicy garlic and crucifix free interviews. Why would there be either of those in an interview that Sci-Fi Wire's own Brian Silliman was able to have with the stars of What We Do in the Shadows, Harvey Guillen and Natasha Demetrio. But before we get familiar with that familiar, why don't we check in with Alexis and see what happened this week in the news? Okay, Alexis, there's some, I'm going to call it, not weird news, but it's like, there's like some thinky news this week, I think.
I think we should just say it. It's weird.
It's weird. The first kind of big piece of news is relatively recent, and it's that Henry Cavill is probably going to be reprising his role as Superman in some capacity in some DC film, whether it's a cameo. It seems like it's not super likely that it's another standalone Superman film, but it could even be in The Batman, according to rumors, right? That's what I'm getting.
Yeah, so first of all, let's make it clear. Henry Cavill is not grounded as Superman.
No. Good, very good. That was a good one. You're laser focused on puns.
I am laser focused, man. We are taking off and flying out of here. Yeah, you know, it's bizarre news, to say the least. I mean, you know, depending on how much of a fan you were of Henry Cavill to begin with, that's, you know, good news or not so good news. What I think is interesting is the timing. This comes on the heels of the announcement of the Snyder Cut. And lo and behold, who was there as a guest during that watch party? Henry Cavill. So I think it's an interesting validation, you can say, of Cavill's importance to the DCEU, or at least to this character, that he's not done with it. It's a little bit of a backstory. If you'll all remember, in September of 2018, there were reports that Cavill had departed the franchise. You know, no one really said anything about what was going on there. There was a lot of speculation that he was supposedly set to make a cameo in Shazam. That, of course, didn't happen, but Superman did pop up. You just didn't see Cavill's face. So there was a lot of talk about that. And then there was just this weird follow-up to all of it where, you know, if I remember correctly, you know, Cavill's camp said he didn't specifically say that he had exited the franchise, but for all intents and purposes, everybody kind of thought, you know, that's it.
Kaput. He's out. Yeah.
He's gone. You know, let's move on. And, you know, there was all that talk of Michael B. Jordan donning the cape and coming in and, you know, really rethinking that franchise, which is just a terrific you know, line of conversation there, I think. And then, lo and behold, we get the news that Cavill actually is coming back in some form. Now, to what you had actually asked over there, it doesn't look like it's going to be a standalone Superman movie, at least what we're seeing from reports that are coming in. It could be a cameo. You know, it could very well be in Shazam 2 or Aquaman 2, maybe even Black Adam, but it's anybody's guess. What we do know, or at least what it seems won't happen, is that it won't be a surprise appearance in the Snyder Cut.
Interesting. So this is where, when I was saying earlier, it's like thinky news, because I think this raises a lot of questions that fans kind of perpetually have about the DC Extended Universe, such as, if he appear, could he appear in the Batman? Does that make Robert Pattinson's Batman part of the DCEU? So Ben Affleck is definitely no longer Batman. Robert Pattinson is here. Is he not Batman? Who's the Joker? Is Joaquin Phoenix? I mean, Todd Phillips has gone out of his way to say Joaquin Phoenix is not the extended universe Joker. So it just like, it kind of, for me at least, brings up all of these questions about like how messy DC has kind of allowed everything to become, how like muddled it is. But also I will say, I know I'm mixing thoughts here, but I think Henry Cavill is a really good Superman who just kind of hasn't been done a whole lot of justice there. by the films that he's played Superman in. But I mean, he's like one of the most franchisable actors in Hollywood. He leads like four different franchises at any given time. So I don't know. I think it raises a lot of questions about like, what are you guys doing over there? You're squandering this great Superman. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, you gotta give it, you know, I mean, this guy looks the part, and for all intents and purposes, he was a decent Superman in Man of Steel. At least I thought so.
I thought so, yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, though. It raises all sorts of questions, and it really goes to the heart of what DC is trying to do with the future of the DCEU. You're absolutely right. They've shifted their strategy to really focus more on standalone films, and there's been tremendous success there. Wonder Woman stood on its own. Aquaman, you know, I think it is the biggest, highest grossing, or one of the highest grossing DC films, did really well because it told its own story, even if that character had appeared in other DCEU films. So you would sort of think that that's the direction they're heading in. Joker was critically acclaimed. It was a standalone story. So
I mean, it won Oscars. Absolute,
and it won an Oscar for Joaquin Phoenix. It led... it dominated the Oscar count for nominations as well.
Yeah.
So a lot of questions to be answered on exactly what Henry Cavill's role will be here and what it means for the future of the DCEU.
So going from the future to the past, Josh Gad has been doing his reunion series through quarantine. He reunited the cast of Splash. He did... Back to the Future, and it was just announced that next week, so I assume we'll probably be, if I have my way, we'll talk about it next week too, but he's reuniting the cast of The Lord of the Rings, and they've shared screen grabs from the Zoom call, and he truly got everyone to be involved. It's not just like, oh, he grabbed like one or two people who were available. He's truly reuniting the cast. I'm probably too excited for this, but I'm so excited to see all these guys together again. And maybe Liv Tyler. I don't know. I don't remember if she's in there, but.
Well, Josh Gad is my hero. I mean, man, this guy's got some serious pull.
Yeah. I mean, I guess everyone is also just like home. Like you really have no excuse. Like what's Elijah Wood? He's like, I'm busy. Like literally nobody's
busy. He's playing
busy right
Animal
now.
Crossing. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, that's true. He's playing Animal. We know. We know exactly how
we know where
Elijah
he is.
Is.
We can track his movements.
But this is super cool. And I don't feel like, I guess Lord of the Rings is especially exciting to me because fantasy is my thing. It's what I love. And also because it's so many people that he's managed to wrangle. I'm sure this won't happen just because it hasn't been the forum for it, but I'm kind of hoping there's some like Amazon Lord of the Rings series news maybe that they have, but I don't know that, I don't think actors from the original series would have it, but I'm hoping.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. The reunion is massive. Like if you just look at the actual Zoom page, like all the screens there, it's like this massive mosaic. So he was able to get everybody. What's interesting to note is the timing. You're absolutely right. You know, we're all excited about the upcoming Amazon Lord of the Rings series for this. But also, Lord of the Rings as a franchise ended on such a high note. I mean, 11 Oscars, a perfect tally. It won everything it was nominated for. It tied the record. So there's just a lot of affection for this. And, you know, you can never get enough of reunions, especially a reunion of this caliber for this franchise.
I will say that three of the best days of my life were the day I married my husband, the day my son was born, and the day I landed in New Zealand and felt like I was flying over Mordor when I went and visited the Hobbiton. So I'm like, this reunion is.
I love it. That there just says everything about you.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And it's a good opportunity to also mention that Sci-Fi has been doing, I don't want to call, we've been doing our Sci-Fi Wire rewinds, which sometimes, you know, involve getting casts together. I don't think I'm allowed to say yet, but we just shot a really fun one where there is actually like kind of some news about a beloved franchise. So everyone should look out for that. And obviously Katie Wilson, one of our other hosts, has been doing a bunch of fun stuff around Xena Warrior Princess, which is airing on Sci-Fi, the channel. So it's just like the age of reunions, I guess, because everyone's hanging out at home.
Absolutely. But I also think it speaks to the strength of a lot of the movies and TV shows that really captured everybody's hearts, that all these years, decades later, you just can't get enough of the cast getting back together.
Yeah. And one of my favorite stories from this week, and again, this is kind of like a more of almost like more of a conversation starter than what you would think of as like super fascinating news. But the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, which is the body that runs the Golden Globes, changed their nominating rules for acting categories to only include performances where the actor's face is seen. And this was directly tied to Pedro Pascal's performance in The Mandalorian. We do, I guess I have to say spoiler alert, at the end of the series, well, the first season, we do see his face. So he qualifies for a nomination. But I think that this is a true, I mean, I have strong feelings about the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. Who doesn't? But it's kind of a weird move, I think, to make in 2020.
It is. Well, first of all, there's a lot of attention on the performance. I mean, it's a very imposing performance. There's a physicality to it. It's great. He's on screen. He's got this badass armor. His armor gets upgraded. You know, he's up in a jetpack flying around and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, so the character itself, the image and the visual of the character itself is front and center in the series. The character who plays him, or at least his voice, Pedro Pascal, you're right, doesn't pop up until the end. So if you really break down that performance in terms of Pedro Pascal's contribution, you know, he was there on set, but there were other stunt doubles who were used for specific scenes. If you guys will watch the Disney Gallery docuseries on The Mandalorian, you will see that two actors were used for very specific tasks. You know, one was done for capoeira and stuff like that. So, you know, very valid uses of different actors for different purposes on screen. If you go by that barometer, then, you know, you can really break down Pascal's performance to some really wonderful voice work and obviously some scenes where he was in as well, and a very emotional scene where his mask was removed in the end and you see him. So he did give that performance, and he informed that performance throughout the entire production process. Now, with the Golden Globes, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association is saying is that now a voiceover only performance will not count, which could be tricky for a lot of other actors hoping to score nominations. But if you use this specific gauge for it, you know, it throws up in the air a lot of things that could have been nominated before. If you'll remember a few years ago, Scarlett Johansson was the talk of the town for her very affecting performance in Her, but she was just a voice of an AI, but she was there throughout the entire movie, bringing so much emotion to it. You've also got Brendan Fraser in Doom Patrol, you know, that knocks him out. I'm not sure if he was, you know, in contention, but it's a lot of questions about these types of performances and whether or not they're valid. Apparently they're not.
The ones that immediately, and again, because it's my personal obsession, but what comes to mind are Andy Serkis as Gollum, or in Planet of the Apes as Caesar. Like, those are clearly both physical, vocal, and facial performances, even though we never actually see, I'm doing air quotes, his face. All of his, or you could look at Rosa Salazar in Alita Battle Angel, where I think the line between what is someone's, for lack of a better word, actual face. You know, that sounds like I'm talking about like surgery or something, but it's like, it's becoming blurrier and blurrier. So to draw this hard line of, well, we have to see the actor's face. Okay. But then define for me what their face is. Like, what is, if someone were wearing, you know, like obviously in this performance, he's wearing a mask the whole time. That doesn't count, or the amount of stunt doubles, does that make a difference? Is Tom Cruise the only person who's truly performing because he performs all of his own stunts?
And in space, let's not forget.
And in space, let's not, yeah, he's going to space. Unlike Elon Musk, another story. I just think it's a strange time. And I think if you're going to draw that line, then you should open up another category for something like non-traditional performances or motion capture. I think they did, wasn't the Hollywood Foreign Press, some nominating body did recognize Andy Serkis for like his achievements in performance capture.
You're absolutely right. Motion capture is a whole, you know, can of worms.
Totally,
it's a Pandora's box. Can of worms is not the right word. It's a wonderful tool that has led to such wonderful performances. You know, it's a whole different discussion and raises a lot of questions really about how technology is helping enhance performances, but how much of that performance comes from the technology and how much of it comes from the actor. And I think, you know, you can say that a lot of it comes from the actor, all the nuances, you know, all the ticks in the face and, you know, where the eye is looking, you know, those really come straight from the actor. And there was a lot of buzz that Andy Serkis, you know, was up for contention for his very, very affecting performances in Planet of the Apes. Of course, you know, his career-defining performance or career-changing performances, Gollum, but none of them have ever been nominated for an Oscar. And that is probably an injustice because I personally think they stand up there with the best physical performances. But, you know, I'm sure there are those who may not see it the same way.
The last one that I will reference that it makes me bummed for is The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. I think they credit as the performers, both the puppeteers and the voice actors. I just think like we should be making more room for more types of performances, not limiting ourselves to a traditional understanding of what a performance is. So, Hufpa, I disagree with you. If you're listening, I disagree. But anyway.
Let's just nominate Baby Yoda. Yeah. Can we do that?
Can we?
There we go. Let's just give him his own cat. Let's give him his honorary Golden Globe. Let him be, what is it? Miss Golden Globe, Junior Golden Globe, Mr. Golden Globe.
Honestly.
You know, like the kids of stars.
Their viewership would skyrocket if they had, they would tap into a whole other demographic.
Instead of him lifting up a bowl of soup, he's lifting up the Golden Globe. How about that?
Alexis, that is...
Let's do it. Let's book
really
it.
Such
book
a good him. Idea. Let's book it. He's booked up through. He
let's just turn him into the Golden Globe statuette. You're handing out Baby Yoda. I'm in.
Oh my God.
That is the way.
This is the way. The last story kind of makes sense. We're talking about puppets and unconventional films. There's Labyrinth news, which is coming long after that film was made, but it's been in the works for a long time, a Labyrinth sequel, and there's actually news around it this week.
Yeah, this is pretty amazing. So Labyrinth, of course, released in 1986, not a big hit when it came out, you know, and at that time people kind of thought, oh, cute little puppets, you know, in the wake of Dark Crystal, you know, it had this unknown actress named Jennifer Connelly and a lot of cute little Jim Henson stuff. But over the years, just became a cult hit. It's so beloved by so many people, but nothing has ever happened to it. And now, this week, we have talked that there is a sequel, and it's going to be directed by Scott Derrickson, who, interestingly, stepped back from Doctor Strange this past January. So that's great news for a lot of people who've just been hoping for some life in this franchise. If you look at it, everything about this was just ripe for some kind of spin-off, some kind of TV series. There have been comic books. In fact, there was one that was just released, I believe it was 2 years ago, that told the backstory of the Goblin King, but nothing really concrete beyond that. Interestingly, actually, back in 2018, there was news of a musical which made a lot of sense. Those song numbers are just so memorable. Of course, they were written by David Bowie, rest in peace. So just tremendous excitement with the news that there is a sequel. But of course, that goes on and raises a couple of questions. There was talk of a sequel back in 2016. In fact, there was a screenwriter and eventually a director that never panned out. So the question now becomes, okay, you've got Scott Derrickson, terrific visual director, has a great grasp of fantastical themes and a fantastical kind of aesthetic. What happens next? Do you bring back Jennifer Connelly? How do you approach the Goblin King when everybody knows the Goblin King is David Bowie, looks like David Bowie, acts like David Bowie, and sings like David Bowie?
I think you've got to do something super... Can I swear on this podcast?
Let me bleep you out. Beep!
Yeah, I think you've got to do something super
beep
and cool. Like, make Janelle Monáe or, like, do something... I think you've got to, like, blow that out of the water because you've got to have a Goblin King.
Janelle Monáe would be amazing. Or
Thank
you know
you.
What?
We have good ideas on this podcast.
Let's just go tap our old friend Andy Serkis, get him to do a motion capture Goblin King.
There it
and
is.
That will get him his Best Actor nomination.
Can it?
Can he
if
sing?
He does a mocap?
Let's let him sing too.
I bet you Andy Serkis absolutely can sing.
In a Gollum voice, huh?
Yeah.
Dance, magic, dance.
It's a pretty good,
precious
pretty good
dance.
Gollum. That's a pretty solid Bowie Gollum. It's very exciting. It does feel like there is a lot of talk of like sequels and franchise reviving. It feels like every studio executive in Hollywood is like going through their doors and going like, oh yeah, that. Let me get to that while I can't go outside.
I agree. One thing I will say about this though, whatever Scott Derrickson decides to do, I'm in it. I'm in and I really want to see what he does. But I think one thing that really made the original film stand out and that gave it so much heart was the fact that it was made with actual puppets, the Jim Henson legacy. And I think that's a success that they saw with the Dark Crystal redo that just happened. And I'm really hoping that they keep that sensibility, that heart to that movie with this sequel.
You have to. I agree. I completely agree. Well, Alexis, thanks so much for stopping by and talking about this week's Thinky News, which is what my genius brain is going to call it. Thinky News. Yikes. But yeah, it was a super interesting week, and a lot of our news items were about upcoming news items. So
they were.
Maybe next week, yeah.
And if you want to check out the latest news items, you can always go to sci-fi.com.
Yes.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
If any of our listeners haven't seen What We Do in the Shadows, which is the fantastic FX TV show that's based on the Taika Waititi and Jemaine Clement directed movie of the same name, now is absolutely the time to check it out. So it is a mockumentary style show following the lives of a group of vampires living in a house, very logically, on Staten Island. So it's kind of, it has a vibe like The Office, but with more blood. If you've seen the movie, there are the occasional werewolf, which is I love the werewolves. Love Rhys Darby, but anyway. Brian Silliman, who normally hosts the Sci-Fi Wire podcast Job of the Pod and our YouTube series Warp Factor, decided to pop in to speak with a couple of the stars of the TV show, partly because he's an excellent interviewer, but also because he's a really big fan of the show. And if you know anything about Brian, it's that when he's a really big fan of something, he's a really big fan of something. And I kind of like reared my head back and said, really big fan of something. So here he is speaking with Natasha Demetrio, who plays Nadia, a centuries-old vampire, and Harvey Guillen, who plays Guillermo, a human trying to earn the vampire's respect through service and loyalty in the hopes of eventually being turned into a vampire himself.
Hi, this is Brian Silliman, and I am lucky enough to be talking with the star of What We Do in the Shadows on FX, Natasha Demetrio, who plays Nadia. Welcome. It is such a pleasure to talk to you today.
Heyo!
Congratulations on the season three pickup.
Thank you so much. Very, very exciting. How are we going to film it? It might be the first vampire show you see filmed on Zoom.
When did you find out about that news? Was that up in the air or had you known for a while?
No, I had no idea. I found out literally a minute before it came out in the press. We got an email at like 1 minute to six or whatever the time it was. And yeah, I found out then. I mean, we talked about a series three and the writers had talked about it and it was very much up for discussion. But, you know, then you never know with television. And then on top of that, the world went crazy. It was very lovely news. I feel very, very blessed to have had that lovely news.
And so are we, because if it's not obvious now, it will be. I am a huge fan of the show and I really don't know what I would do without it. So just thank the energy vampires that they're letting it survive. Now, at the time that we're talking, I personally have only seen up and through episode 8 of the series. But what can fans expect for the rest of season 2? I understand that that episode 9 is a big one for Nadia.
Yes. I mean, it's, I can't say too much, but it is, it's a good one. There's lots of witches, I can say. Ooh. That. And my hair is bigger than ever. I mean, I worked with the hair lady about a star that I was thinking, and then we did it, and it weighed a lot. So the fact that my head is kept upright in that episode, then it's been a success. Yes, there's lots of, it's got all my favorite things. It's got witches. It's got a lot of sperm. a lot of men with boners and more witches. And I wear a purple suede coat, which was like a sort of Stevie Nicks moment. It was heaven.
I can't wait for episode 9 and to see what's going to happen there. But I have seen it's going to be an embarrassment of riches, because I never expected to see Nadia and Laszlo singing Kokomo on stage. And then it happened, which I just never know what to expect from this series. Because if you told me this season would begin with Benedict Wong scat singing Haley Joel Osment back to life badly, I'd be like, okay. And then you and Matt Berry are singing Kokomo and a lot of other classics. Did you have any personal contribution in terms of what songs were there, or was that all scripted, or were there any ideas thrown out of the table? Pretty much, how did all that singing come to be?
Oh, that was like, the episode we're talking about was like definitely one of the most fun I had to film. It was so fun. And yeah, we improvised a lot of songs. There were a lot of sort of comedy songs written in for us to sing, and we did all of them. And then we improvised. I think there's one that they used in the trailer, the We're Feeling Horny for Blood, We're Feeling Horny for Love, is one I wrote. Yeah. I wrote that song. Matt wrote some. I haven't seen the final cut of the episode, so I don't know what the songs put in. But yeah, no, that was super. I mean, I loved that episode so much. It was so fun to film, and like the actually filming it and seeing, looking into the audience and seeing Mark Proctor, who plays Colin Robinson, actually in an audience watching us sing was heaven to me.
Yeah, it was a dream pairing, because of course you and Matt are fantastic, but throwing in Colin Robinson is always a good thing.
Yeah, always a good thing. So yeah, it was a lot that, I mean, yeah, I mean, we sang, there definitely won't be enough time to have included every song that we sang, but there's enough for at least a 2-album deal if anyone's listening.
Oh, another bit of merchandising I want. I just remember there being a very casual sung lyric about Hitler. And I was like,
that was actually one of the that was one of the writers who wrote, that was an amazing one. Yeah, super funny.
a bit of a silly question here, but well, maybe not. I'm not sure. But in terms of vampires, the larger mythos and the occult, is there any, either before the show or after or whatever, any real life belief in vampires for you? I guess I'm pretty much asking if you believe in vampires.
100%. Have you seen What We Do in the Shadows? It's a documentary about vampires.
I hadn't thought of it like that because it's literally right in front of me.
Yeah, you know, they are there everywhere and they're hungry.
I think energy vampires are very much everywhere.
They're all are. Emotional vampires, energy vampires, and there's so many more.
I think I might be one myself. Exactly. I'll just wrap it up with this. You guys have no shortage of guest stars on this show. Last season, you had The Trial was packed with every vampire actor that there's ever been. And Taika has said that Kate Blanchett asked to be in the episode and he said no because she'd never played a vampire. This season, you've had Mark Hamill, and I know you can't spoil anything in terms of the finale and what that might portend, but is there anybody, like, who would, for you, who would the biggest get be in terms of someone to play off of on this series?
Oh, 100%. Catherine O'Hara, Lisa Kudrow, Kristen Wiig. Yeah, I think they would be my dream three off the bat. Yeah, they are, like, imagine Catherine O'Hara as a vampire.
Oh my God, I'm just imagining the two of you pinging back and forth and mind is exploding.
It would be heaven. It would be absolute heaven. Yes, please. I would love that very much.
Okay, well now I can think about nothing but that, but I cannot wait for the next episode and What We Do in the Shadows. Thank you so much for talking to me today, and congratulations again on season three. I can't wait to see what happens, and I will not ask you to say Colin Robinson. I've been asked, and I've been told not to ask you to say it, so
not
I will
to
not
say
ask.
Colin Robinson, why is that?
Well, I mean, because I was like, can I ask her to say it? And they're like, no.
I'm
like,
Robinson.
Okay, see, it's no big deal.
What's the matter with that? Colin the Robinson? Is that like a spoiler or something?
No, it's pretty much, you know, it's just, hey, do the catchphrase. It's you know, a little gauche, I suppose. But
I see. Oh, no, I love a catchphrase. Very, very cheap, low. I'm gauche, baby.
I mean, yeah, I'm in love with the way all of the characters on your show just say Colin Robinson. It's just become a thing. And in this age where I'm slowly going mad by myself, sometimes I just say it around the house. So
perfect. That's what I want.
Hello, I'm Brian Silliman, and I am so happy that I'm joined by everybody's favorite vampire familiar, Guillermo from What We Do in the Shadows, none other than Harvey Guillen. Harvey, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh yeah, thanks for having me.
First off, I have to say congratulations on the season three pickup, and also, if I may add, a humble thank God.
You and I both.
At the time of this recording, I personally have seen up and through episode 8, so we have 2 episodes left. What can fans look forward to, obviously without spoiling too much, for the rest of season 2?
Definitely a big climactic finale. It is probably, you know, one of my favorites of the season. I mean, there's so many episodes that I'm always like, that's my favorite too, whenever we start talking about it. And what a joy to be a part of a show that you get to say that, you know, where it's like a lot of episodes become your favorite. Yeah, I think that the things that are going to come, you know, to the surface will leave us in a place. I'm trying to think of the right word without giving too much away. It will leave us in suspense, and it will definitely open up a door.
Yeah, because that's what last season did when we found out what your real lineage is. And that has obviously played a big part in this season. So it's my question with Guillermo especially was always, are they ever going to turn him? Is he ever going to fulfill this dream?
Right.
But now I'm still thinking that, but also thinking, when are they going to find out?
So now we have two different, you know, roads that he's on. And then we have people who are cheering to one side and cheering to the other. Cause I didn't know that was going to happen after season 1. I definitely didn't know that was the way that the finale would would end and his storyline would, you know, be at a crossroads. And so I was really kind of rooting for him in season one to be like a vampire. It's like maybe by the end of season one, but then that would be too soon, wouldn't it? It'd be like making a vampire already. But they treat him like shit so much that you just want him to get out of that, you know, scenario and actually accomplish his goals after a decade of service. But I love that it went the way that it did and the way that it has been going, just because that's a credit to our writers who, you know, came up with this idea, and Jermaine and Paul and Stephanie, who just constantly think, what if we did this, you know, and it just makes the character so much more layered.
You're so, so good at this with all the other characters, because I feel like a lot of times everyone on this series is completely oblivious except for you. And you kind of, Guillermo sees what's going on with everybody. And that means you're putting up with a lot of foolishness and you're playing the straight man a lot of times, for lack of a better way to say it. But you're so good at and we see the foolishness through your reactions a lot of the time. How kind of, were there any particular inspirations for how you did that? Or are you just really reacting in the moment to what they're actually giving you?
I really am reacting to what they're giving, you know, for we don't know the storyline ahead of time. So most of the time we find out what's happening in the script the day we show up to the table read. And they won't tell us ahead of time what's coming up. And we also do cross shooting, which means that we shoot episodes out of order. So in 1 week, we could be shooting episode two of season two and also episode five. And we don't know what happened between three and five. And they won't tell us, like we won't know. And so in episode five, you're shooting a scene. And so I always say Guillermo's reactions are organic, because half of the time he's just like not knowing what's happening. And he's just like looking at the audience to like, are you watching this? What's going on? We're in the middle of this, like what the fuck's going on? You know, like it's like that idea, because he generally is always on his toes. Like you never know with this group what's going to happen. And, you know, the next crazy shenanigans are going to get into, because he's seen it all. And every time he's just in the middle of it, he's the audience. And we're just like, here we go again. Are you kidding me with it? You know, like that idea. But it also helps me as the actor, because I generally half the time am terrified because I don't know what's happening next.
Yeah, I know you get this question all the time because it feels like it's all spontaneous, but I know that it's you, Mark Proch, Natasha have all said that it's very well scripted, but that especially in season two, Jermaine Clement has loosened the reins and there's a lot of encouragement to improvise.
Absolutely. I think, you know, like the scripts are already amazing. Like we have amazing writers. And we could do the scripted version and be fine and be like, this is hilarious. But we get the liberty to go on set and do a take with the scripted version and then do an improv version, which is great because you already know where the story has to go from A to B. And now you just do it more in your character's voice. So as long as you get to those destinations and you're natural, that's what the whole show. And I think that's what the allure of the show is as well, is that it looks just organic, like the words that are coming out of their mouths. You're like, what? Because some of the best lines that we've gotten this season are a mixture of like the scripted and improvised. And some of the improvised that you do, you don't know will make it to the final cut. So we as the cast are just in the know as the audience when it comes to what's going to be the final product, because we don't know. We do different, you know, takes, and when we see it, when we see the final product on the show, we're like, oh, they chose the second take from that scene, and then they did the ending when we did the last take. Okay, got it. Like, you know, they put it all together and it makes sense, and it blends so perfectly well. And that's also credit to our editors.
When this job for this show came about, had you seen the original film that it was based on?
No, actually, it was in queue to watch on Amazon, and people had been telling me to watch it, and I was at home when I got a text from my friend, Mimi, that she was having a wine and cheese night, and I said, I was going to watch this new movie or a movie that I hadn't seen, and I literally went to the wine and cheese night, and I met someone there who was her friend, and the next day texted me and said, you should audition for my fiance's new show. It's called What We Do in the Shadows. And I said, okay. And I got an audition and went in, wanted to meet Allison Jones, casting director, who I never met before, who wasn't there. She was in London auditioning for the other characters. And 2 hours later, they called and said they were going to test me for the role. even though the role was 20 years older, Guillermo was written 20 years older. And I said, well, I'll just do my best. So I did my best impression of Guillermo. I parted my hair in the middle and I curled it. I found these Harry Potter glasses and I popped the lenses out. I found this like brown gross sweater vest and a long orange sleeve shirt. And I went to the audition and then I booked it. And that's how, yeah.
And then, were you already familiar with, say, Taika and Jermaine's work? If you weren't before that, you certainly probably were after that.
I was familiar with the Flight of the Conchords. You know, I'm glad I didn't watch it when I knew I was auditioning, because I chose not to watch it to be influenced by it. Because I was like, oh, I don't want to make decisions based on the movie because it'll be in my head. And then after I auditioned, and then I went home and I watched it, and I'm glad I didn't, because I was like blown away. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? This is amazing, you know? And I wanted to be a part of it even more. So I was like, oh, I have to. Oh, this is great. And so weeks went by because I was supposed to test for the role, and I never tested. One weekend over MLK weekend, Jermaine and Taika called me on the phone on a Sunday. It wasn't even like the work week. And they're like, hey, is this Harvey? And I was like, yes. And he's like, hey, it's Jermaine and Taika. And you're the one. And I was like, what? And I was like, I'm testing for you. And he's like, nope, you'll see you on set next week. And it was like such a...
Oh my God. I mean, just to get those two on the phone, period, on a Sunday. Yeah. But as an actor, to get the two of them offering you a job, I mean...
I would have been happy if they called and just said, hey, unfortunately not going to work out, but hi. And I would have been like, that's okay. It was great talking to you.
Yeah.
But... such like great news. And and I've been ignoring the call also that day, because I was waiting for like just a sign. I was like, when am I going to test for the show? And they didn't call me like three times, because it was like it was a 16 digit number, and I was like, well, I'm not falling for that, telemarketers, and it's like 16 digit calling you. I was like, nope. And I declined it like three times, and finally in the afternoon I was with my sister. She was driving. And she's like, just answer the fucking phone. And I was like, okay. And I was like, hello. And I put it on speaker, and it's like, hey, is this Javi? And I was like, and then I looked at her, and she loves Thor, and like she was like, "Oh my God!"
Wow, that's absolutely incredible. And talk about waiting for a sign about your dreams and ignoring the literal call. It's literally Taika and Jermaine trying to get through to you. That's amazing.
Decline.
When is my dream gonna happen? Oh, shut up!
Give me a sign, God. Anything. Quiet. Phone. I'm trying to look for a sign. Oh God, I put this on silent.
I will end with this. You guys have no shortage of amazing guest stars on the show. But for you personally, if you can choose, if you had your choice of anyone to guest star, to play opposite with on the show, who would your dream guest star be?
Wow.
For Guillermo to play with?
What did Mark and Natasha say? I wonder if we have the same ones.
Natasha, I remember she definitely wanted Catherine O'Hara.
Oh, yeah. Week,
people like that.
I'm glad she said that, because that's definitely up on my list. So, okay, I won't say that one because she's already said it. So we're going to put these into the universe. So she's already said Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that one. For me, it's a tough one, because I would want to kind of play on the, Antonio Banderas like angle. So that'd be kind of cool to have him, full circle and come and play with us. But also I would love to have... Amy Sedaris, I think, would be a great addition to this world. Like, I'm just a big Strangers with Candy fan, and I think she's just so funny, and I think it would be great to work with her.
Well, Harvey, it was such a pleasure to talk to you today. I am such a huge fan of the show, if that's not already apparent, and you're just so fantastic on it. So best wishes, and I cannot wait for the rest of the season, and I can't wait for season 3, even if it's done over one giant Zoom call. I would watch it.
We'll see you in 2028.
Absolutely.
So if you haven't checked out the show, you can watch on FX and on Hulu. And now is a great time to put your binging hat on, because the season finale is just a couple of weeks away. So get yourself up to date, get caught up, or rewatch, whichever applies to you. And if you're already a huge fan of the show, or you just want to hear Brian having even more fun with our guests, we are going to be releasing the full interviews with both of them in the coming week. So remember to subscribe to Who Won the Week so you can stay up to date on all of our bonus and regular content. And that, of course, brings us to my favorite section of the episode, and really of the entire week, when I get to crown who won the week. And this week, steel drum roll, please, because it's almost summer. Next week. I think next week won this week, because next week we got our Lord of the Rings reunion. We got more What We Do in the Shadows, and we have the full interview bonus content, What We Do in the Shadows with Brian, coming out. So I think that this week's winner is in fact next week, for all of those reasons, and because the sun'll come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar. I'm going to stop there. That does it for today's episode of Who Won the Week. Please remember to subscribe to our podcast to keep up to date with all our upcoming episodes and bonus content. And of course, you can follow Sci-Fi Wire on Instagram and Twitter for even more up-to-the-date news. And you can go to scifiwire.com. And you can turn on the channel Sci-Fi, which is demarcated Sci-Fi, in your TV guide. So pick your player.